doy mi vida a otro angelito más bendito sea Dios.
¡No, mamá! ¡Y contigo no se puede!
It might sound like just another soap opera, but this Mexican drama has changed people's lives. As a result of this storyline, where a young woman refuses to repeat her mother's life of multiple pregnancies and poverty, a third more people visited family planning clinics, and sales of over-the-counter contraceptives went up by almost 25%. The whole idea goes back to a social psychology experiment conducted in a Californian nursery in 1961, involving something called a Bobo doll.
The room contained varied play materials, and children could choose to play aggressively or non-aggressively.
I've come to Stanford University, just south of San Francisco, to meet the legendary Albert Bandura, who did the Bobo doll study. He's in his 80s and still works full-time. And what's really striking about the psychology department here is its position. Instead of being tucked away around the back, like lots of psychology departments, you come onto the campus, up a driveway lined with palm trees. There's the psychology department, right in front of you, in pride of place. And when you come inside, you can see why. There's a list of professors right inside the door here that reads like the spines of my psychology textbooks when I was a student. Sir Jonk, Maccabee, Zimbardo, they're all here, and of course, Albert Bandura.
Al Bandura is now, as of 2007, the most frequently cited psychologist in the world. He's just topped Freud and Skinner and Eysenck.
He has fought long and hard for the science of human behavior in action. He's been very impatient with personality approaches that simply paint a static picture of a person, because in his mind, that doesn't tell you anything about what the person will do. He wants psychology to be relevant, and the psychology he does is relevant.
One of Al's strengths is he's been the equivalent to the person who says the emperor has no clothes. Lots of times Al says something that to non-psychologists might be obvious. It's just that when the field has been marching in a wrong direction, Al says, here's where the real parade is going on.
Professor Lee Ross, one of Al Bandura's colleagues in the psychology department at Stanford, and before him, two others, Laura Carstensen and Philip Zimbardo. Today, Bandura is very famous within psychology, but back in the early 60s, he was swimming against the tide of behaviorism when he came up with the Bobo doll study. I should explain, by the way, that a Bobo doll is a 5-foot-tall inflatable doll. It's got a weighted base, so no matter how hard you hit it, it always springs back up.
At that time, behaviorism ruled the field, and it was assumed you learn only by direct experience. You have to perform responses, and then rewards and punishment shape the nature of the behavior. I couldn't imagine how a culture could produce the kind of complex competencies, the language, the mores, through trial and error fumbling. So I saw this remarkable disconnect between the way in which people live in everyday life and the kind of theory we had about human learning.
Al first became famous in psychology for showing that people learn by observation. That's really what precedes the Bobo doll studies. He showed that animals, one animal who observed something happening to another animal, could learn that contingency without having to, as the Skinnerians or the Hullians, these schools of learning theory at the time, would have said, well, you have to do something and then you get reinforced or not reinforced. And Al said, no, you can learn just by observing contingencies in the environment. Well, anyone who's ever raised a child knows if the child watches one person go and take a cookie out of the drawer, the child will go over and take the cookie out of the drawer. You don't have to carefully shape that behavior and then reinforce the child. Everyone knows we learn by observation. Al was the one who said, don't lose sight of the fact that a lot of the reinforcement is vicarious.
At the same time, we had the advent of television. If you look at Freud's theory, Skinner's theory, Piaget's theory, these theories formulated before the advent of television. So I felt that we needed a psychology that reflected the changing reality of social influence in terms of its speed, its scope, and its power. There was growing public concern about the effects of televised violence on children. We had almost every imaginable form of homicidal behavior being transmitted into the homes.
Of course, what Bandura needed for his Bobo doll experiment was children that he could get easy access to. And he was very lucky because the psychology department at Stanford actually has its own nursery called the Bing Nursery. It's on a different site today from the original one where the Bobo doll experiment was done. But even now, they have lots of research going on, and on the wall here there's at least 10 different research projects happening. So the parents of the children know that if they enroll them in this nursery, they might well take part in these studies, and the children themselves can choose on a daily basis whether they want to take part. It's centred around this little quadrangle here, and there's a tree in the middle, and it's lunchtime at the moment, so the kids are all outside playing. But there are these rooms all around the quadrangle, individual study rooms, where they can take part in the experiments. The children know these rooms as games rooms, where they get to sit with one adult who focuses a lot of attention on them. So, of course, they quite like it. But they've got one-way mirrors and they've got video cameras. It was the earlier incarnation of the Bing Nursery where the Bobo doll study was done.
The children can choose to play aggressively or non-aggressively.
So that little girl is really punching him, isn't she? She's getting the Bobo doll right down on the floor.
And then just while he's throwing it up.
Well, she's picked her out and thrown it.
Hitting the doll.
Al Bandura showed me a video of the experiment on his laptop. You have to remember that at the time, people actually thought that watching violence was good for you, following the Freudian idea that it was cathartic. So seeing someone hitting someone else released your aggression and you didn't need to do it yourself. But Al Bandura designed his experiment to test a different theory. The child was left in a room full of toys and witnessed an adult, supposedly on TV, and remember, we're talking the days of black and white telly here, hitting the Bobo doll.
We didn't have technology then. You see, we didn't have video. And so the question is, how are we going to simulate television? So I got a big television box and took out all the innards, and then we projected the modeling through a rear projection arrangement, an 8mm film. There was one little girl who came in and said, "This is a very big set." He said, "Yeah, it's colored." At the end, they said, could he watch another program? How about another channel? And I couldn't tell him that this was only a one-channel station and a one-program system.
Now, the object of interest was the novel aggressive acts, not punching the doll. The children in the control group who had no exposure to the aggressive modeling never exhibited the novel forms.
You had your adult model do very specific things, didn't you? I mean, was the idea that they would say things that the child might not have thought of saying themselves, and that they'd punch the doll in a certain way so that you could see whether they were actually copying?
I wasn't interested in whether the kids would punch a Bobo doll, because that's what you do. But you have a pegboard with a mallet sitting in that room. Would the kids take that mallet and start beating the Bobo doll with it? That's a very novel use of a mallet. None of the control kids did it, you see. So in order to demonstrate learning effects, we had to use very novel acts, aggression toward the Bobo doll. And furthermore, we created neologisms, socceroo and things like this, which control kids would never use. Then I was interested in testing whether you get similar modeling with a cartoon character. We went to the San Francisco Opera House and said, we want an outfit that really looked like a cat. And said, sure, we'll loan you a cat outfit. And so we dressed our model in a cat outfit.
What was she doing there? She got a toy gun?
A toy gun, yeah.
Creative embellishment.
Now here she's using a doll.
A weapon of assault.
I remember accompanying one child back to the nursery school. The child says to me, "You know, I saw a television program and Rocky really beat up the doll and he hit it with a mallet. I could have written the whole script." He had modeled only one or two little aspects of it. So it was clear that he had learned everything, but he was not putting into practice. So that was the next experiment. And we would find that there were big gender differences. Now, it isn't that girls did not learn under tests for learning. They had learned just about as much as the boys. But because of social constraints, they were not exhibiting it.
And it's intriguing that there was this Freudian idea that watching violence could actually be good for you because it could actually drain you of, of your own aggression.
Yeah. If parents were acting on that belief, see, they would be dosing their kids heavily in violence in order to drain their aggressive impulses and reduce their aggression. Even the television networks no longer promote the catharsis hypothesis.
And were you surprised at all at the results that you got, or did you know all along that that's what would happen?
I assume that probably it had instigative effects, because there's a lot of evidence that people who are exposed to violence are likely to behave violently. I was surprised by the scope. See, the network argument is that it only affects some deviant kids. What surprised me is 80% of the kids modeled some aspect of the aggression.
What Bandura did is he identified that there are certain rules, if you like, that control the way in which we learn from interacting with media.
Barry Gunter is Professor of Mass Communications at Leicester University.
The simplistic rule that he found was that if a film model is seen to be rewarded or punished, that can make a difference to whether an observer will copy their behaviour in the future. But there also has to be a degree of identification between the observer and the on-screen actor, so that the more we see that person as similar to ourselves, the more we may see their behaviour as relevant to ourselves.
The Bobo Doll study was the first to look at the impact of TV violence on children. But as violence expands into the virtual world, we can take on the role of aggressive characters ourselves in computer games. Because of concerns that this could be even more powerful than TV, the government set up an official review, headed by clinical psychologist Dr. Tanya Baron, of TV's Tiny Tearaways fame. She told You and Yours recently why they're doing it.
We need to sort of take away the polarisation that exists, which is, are these things bad or are these things good? And I think we need to accept these things are part of our children's lives, and we need to think about them in a sensible way. And I think anxiety comes from the fact that, from a technological point of view, a lot of parents don't know an eighth of what their kids know about these games. So it's about media literacy. It's about helping parents understand how games are classified, what classification means.
If we want to generate a series of regulations or editorial rules and practices, we obviously need to know what are the crucial factors which are most likely to enhance the impact of any particular portrayal.
Because it's interesting, isn't it, that in the shooter computer games, there's usually a story that makes it kind of reasonable for you to be trying to shoot these people. So you're trying to, you know, shoot terrorists before they go and kill someone else.
Yes.
You're not just trying to shoot your next door neighbours for a laugh.
There's a whole series of crucial factors to do with the graphic nature of the violence, how realistic it seems to be, the extent to which we identify with the perpetrators or the victims of on-screen violence, whether it's rewarded or punished, whether it's seen as justified or not. All of these attributes which attach to particular violent portrayals are an important part of an evaluation process which goes on in the minds of viewers, where they will weigh up the value and the meaningfulness, if you like, of a particular portrayal for them as an individual. We'll all of us internalise these different behavioural sequences, and hopefully we will remember also the good points and the bad points about violence, and recognise that, you know, under normal circumstances, this isn't something which you should utilise as a behavioural script.
While technology means there are more ways for children to see violence, it also means there are new ways of researching what happens. Renee Weber, who's assistant professor in mass communication at the University of California, ran a study where they scanned people's brains while they were playing a game hunting down and shooting terrorists to see whether virtual violence lights up any of the same brain areas as real violence. Since he's a big fan of first-person shooter games himself, he didn't expect to find any neurological activity associated with aggression, so the results surprised him. I spoke to Rene Weber in Santa Barbara over the internet, so the sound quality isn't great.
In phases when players played in a violent mode, we could see an inhibition of emotional processing in favor of a cognitive processing. And the pattern, you know, looks very similar to other findings. For example, we know that a dysfunction in the neural circuitry of emotion regulation can be considered as an indicator of aggression. We know that in adolescents with an antisocial conduct disorder, you know, that they show this kind of reduced anterior cingulate cortex activity.
So does it show that the activity that you saw in the brain is the sort of activity you'd expect to see in somebody who was really aggressive and, as you say, somebody who might have some sort of antisocial behavior disorder? That's quite serious, isn't it, to see that in people playing computer games?
Well, yes, that's quite serious on the one hand. On the other hand, you have to put this in perspective. This doesn't mean that we can well, generalize this finding and say, okay, once you play a violent video game, you're going to act aggressively or violently in the real environment. There are a lot of other variables.
So it doesn't necessarily prove that people are then going to copy what they've seen, which is what they did in the Bobo doll experiments. It just shows they were aggressive at that moment.
Absolutely not. And, you know, we all, you, Claudia, we have thousand situations every day where we may act and think aggressively. That's our nature. But I guess you and I, we are not aggressive people. So you cannot generalize our findings and our study to behavior of game players in the real world.
I know that after your paper on this subject was published, Albert Bandura actually got in touch with you to request a copy of the paper.
Oh, yeah, of course. I was flattered, to be honest. Albert Bandura is a hero. I mean, he is one of the really big scientists and psychologists. I hope he liked it.
I don't know what Al Bandura made of René's study. He quit that line of research back in the 60s after a final variation on the Bobo doll scenario.
We were interested in the effects of consequences to the model. So we had, you know, experiments in which Rocky got punished for behaving aggression. In other conditions, he got away with it and so on. I now knew the kind of effects it would have, and I decided I didn't want to continue it for ethical reasons.
Oh, you didn't want it to have those effects on the children?
Yeah, and I didn't want to continue that line of research. I reasoned that if we can promote aggression through social modeling, we should be able to use it for therapeutic purposes. This was a time when our modes of therapy focused almost entirely on talk therapy. I was beginning to formulate an alternative model of psychotherapy. You don't sit around talking about historical causes, but you try to focus on how people can begin to change their behavior in the here and now.
And the first group that Bandura focused on were people who were terrified of snakes.
We get a snake phobic in, we have a caged snake in the room. First of all, we ask them what they fear this thing is going to do. And then we modeled that that's not what it does. Very powerful.
So you get someone to get the snake out and
well, we have, yeah, we have a therapist who's...
And it doesn't bite them.
They think it's going to choke them, so drape the snake around the neck and it hangs there anxiously. We break down the task into very small steps, so we're never asking them to do anything that with a little effort they couldn't achieve. Could they walk 3 inches more? If they still can do it, can you do it for a second? And if they still can do it, we'll do it together. So in about an hour, we have them at the cage beginning to touch the snake. These were people who were plagued. Their lives were impaired. They were tortured with nightmares in which reptiles were pursuing them. One woman came in and explained that reptiles had been pursuing her for 40 years. And last night she had a dream and a boa constrictor had befriended her and was helping her wash the dishes, you see. They were very appreciative for being rid of their phobia, but the treatment had a more profound impact on their lives. They were telling us that we essentially had restored their sense of efficacy to exercise better control over their lives. So I decided to redirect my program research to find out what is this belief system, how do you build it, how does it work, and then how do you use it for human betterment.
He really has, unlike many scientists in many different fields, had an idea and then worked through that idea in every domain possible.
Professor Laura Carstensen is director of the Center for Longevity at Stanford University.
To me, that's what science is. It's building step by step with this kind of care and knowledge that one's findings can be replicated and generalized and then to build on it and to continue to make the relevance clear.
He has relatively simple theories that are applied in many, many different domains, in education, in social psychology, and personality, and now is opening whole new areas in applying basic psychological principles to making dramatic changes in global problems.
The global problems Phil Zimbardo is referring to include family planning, literacy, and the status of women, all of which have been tackled across the developing world through TV and radio drama series.
No estaré ya muy viejo, entre que me vayan a autorizar
This came out of a collaboration between Bandura and a Mexican TV director, Miguel Sabido, who was inspired by the Bobo doll.
I get a call from him one morning in which he explains that he had extracted about six principles from this program of research, and that he has been using them to try to produce society-wide changes.
With remarkable success. This particular drama ran during a literacy campaign when people had been slow to collect the government-supplied reading books.
25,000 people showed up to pick up the primers the next day. It created a hell of a traffic jam in Mexico City. Televisa told Miguel they'll allow him to substitute this for another program provided there's no loss of viewership. So that program, which was a soap opera, had a 21 rating, and his had a 32 rating. So he did pretty well. Prior to the program, you had about 95,000 enrolled, and then you had about 1 million enrolled.
An organization called the Population Media Center now responds to requests from countries for help with producing such dramas. Raising funds from the UN and elsewhere, they train broadcasters from each country to make high-impact soap operas. Bill Ryerson, the president of Population Media Center, told me it's all based on Bandura's work.
His work, as you know, has focused on the influence of role models on people's behavior and on social norms. And so that information has been built into the design of serialized dramas in which key characters gradually evolve from the middle of the road into positive role models for the audience to bring about changes in social norms.
Now, you've got these dramas all over the world now in so many different countries, you know, China, Kenya, Madagascar, Mali. Do people know when they're watching these programs that they're trying to be influenced in some way, or do they just see it as a fun drama?
They do know that it has content, but we're not using these programs to manipulate people into adopting new behaviors. What we're really showing is a range of behaviors that we might classify as positive or negative, that in fact the host country may classify as positive or negative. For example, marriage by abduction in Ethiopia is against the law, but when we started working there, was a social norm. Men would grab schoolgirls off the street, take them home and rape them, and then they would be considered the man's wife. So this is an illegal practice that clearly Ethiopia considers to be negative, and we do too. We showed characters who adopted that norm. We also showed characters who avoided that kind of treatment of women. And most importantly, we showed characters who evolved in their thinking about this practice. The audience, which numbered half the population of the country, observed what the consequences were of a range of practices by these characters, and observe the characters who had the strength to overcome the obstacles to change in that society and adopt a new practice with regard to women's rights, and then decided for themselves how to behave. We weren't telling the audience, do this, don't do that.
See, we aren't imposing any view on people. We really model the variety and hope that they will make reasoned judgments about their own lives. If you're going to try to change entrenched attitudes and behavior, there are no quick fixes. What you need to do is have people model changes in realistic, achievable steps.
I think what's really interesting about it is that you're not just showing, you know, the consequences of, say, unsafe sex for HIV or something like that, that you're actually as well showing a character who's overcome those in the program, which
it's
is
very,
very much got the modeling from Bandura in there.
Very important. Because the characters who overcome the social norm and change into positive role models really give the audience the self-efficacy, to use Bandura's term, the belief that they have the right and the ability to change their own behavior, to influence the outcome of their family life.
In the drama in India, there's a young woman who's studying and she's trying to read her books, and her husband is saying, oh, you know, throw away those books, why do you want to be doing this? And she's rowing with her mother-in-law and all sorts. What was the story you were trying to get across there?
This character, Angori, She aspired to become an attorney and ultimately wanted to become a member of parliament. Her parents said, no, at puberty, girls are married, and here's the man you're marrying. She didn't even know this man. She pleaded with her husband, as you were saying, to let her continue her education. He called in his mother. She was now basically a servant in her mother-in-law's kitchen. Her mother-in-law beat her, destroyed her books, and told her that was her new role in life. Her husband got her pregnant, and at age 15, she died in childbirth with 230 million viewers crying in front of their television set. It had a huge effect on audience attitudes about age of marriage of women and also about acceptability of women in the workplace outside the home.
Did you ever imagine more than 50 years ago when you did the Bobo doll experiment that it might have these sorts of applications all this time later and be making this amount of difference?
Not at all. In the physical and the biological sciences, we have a lot of examples where research pursued for its own right had unexpected benefits. A laser would be an example. Pretty hard to find examples in social sciences.
Something that comes through very clearly about him, too, as a self-made man, as somebody who has worked hard and found something in life that mattered and that he clearly is good at. And he has got a stick-to-itness about it that is impressive.
My parents had no formal education. So they essentially said to me that, I have a choice. I could either stay in this small town and work the fields, play pool, and drink yourself to oblivion in the beer parlor, or you might try to educate yourself and get out of here. I thought that was the better alternative.
This man from a remote Canadian town who basically educated himself has definitely had a worldwide impact. And there seems to be something about his very direct approach to research that's made Al Bandura such a success. Professor Lee Ross, one of his colleagues at Stanford.
I don't want to say simplicity in the sense of simple-mindedness, but simplicity in the sense of not introducing more concepts than are necessary to do the job. You change objective contingencies, and you change subjective perceptions of those contingencies, and you change behavior. And Al has shown over and over again how powerful and useful that idea is.
So one last question. You've been at Stanford a long time doing all this research. Are you going to carry on forever?
Well, this is my 53rd year at Stanford, more than a half a century. So I operate on the notion that it's not the number of miles traveled, but the amount of tread that you still have left that's important. And the last time I checked, I still had enough tread to keep going for a while.